Are recording and broadcasting. I turn the floor over to you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. So we are now ready to begin. So I call this
recording in progress.
Yeah, now we're beginning. I call this meeting of the Board of Directors of the Cambria Community Services District to order. Present, we have four of our members, President Stidell being presently absent, but we do have a quorum. And so I'm going to during her absence until she arrives, I will be chairing the meeting in the interim. Thank you and welcome to everybody. I see we have a nice audience today. John, would you please, can you display the flag or do we have that capability today?
We do. Well,
let's do that and then I'll go ahead and pronounce the Pledge of Allegiance if you guys will join me. Here we go. Okay. Here we go. Okay. So I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty
and justice for all.
Thank you, everybody. Words that we need to bear in mind in these difficult times. The absence of the president means that at the moment there is no president's report. However, I think it would probably be in order when she does arrive at the meeting that we might interrupt our business and if she has a report, she could give it at that time. So moving on to agenda review for additions and deletions to the minutes or to the agenda. Do we have any? Okay. Seeing none, the agenda stands as written. Moving now to board member communications, or any board member may make an announcement, report briefly on his or her activities, or ask a question for clarification. Do we have any board member communications? Okay, seeing none, I do have one. I do wish to remind both the board and the audience and anyone who may be watching this now or later that there is a memorial service, rather a celebration of life for our former member of the Finance Committee, Duane Lee. So that will be at 1 o'clock at the Vets Hall this Saturday. Yes, yes. Yes.
Jocelyn. Jocelyn Center, isn't it?
Yes.
Jocelyn Center.
Sorry, okay, everybody. Jocelyn Center. I'll repeat that then. Thank you, Tom. So Jocelyn Center, that will be 1 o'clock at the Jocelyn Center this Saturday, a celebration of life. So invite all to who knew Duane, and maybe even if you didn't, he's done a great deal of service to our community, and just wish to acknowledge that. Moving along then, let us go to the reports here, public safety. Is anyone here from the Sheriff Department today? Here comes President Seidel, and let's give her a chance to get in and then have her take over. Oh, I'll tell you what, I do not see anyone from the Sheriff's Department, so let us go on to the Fire Chief's report. Chief Hollingsworth, would you be so good as to report now?
Vice President Howell, thank you for letting me be here. Members of the board, it's good to see everyone today. Reporting on the month of September, we had 65 emergency responses in Cambria, one commercial vehicle fire, 34 emergency medical responses, and one ocean rescue that occurred at night. We're up to a total for 766 emergency responses for the year, still on par to be increasing over the last few. Of those, we're at 85% delivery of service for locals versus non-locals. In recent weeks, there has been some concern in regards to some safety issues for the community, and we're expanding the safety bulletin concept that we started a little over a year ago. And in your packets, are included the two most recent ones that we developed for the fire department that we're putting out to the community, one on the use of fire pits and one on the use of open burning and what is not allowed within the community. Those are available on the website, adding to the others that we've already created. And our goal is to be adding a few every month. In fact, we've already created the next ones for next month, which will include smoke detectors and carbon monoxide detectors. And those are already available on the website and will be pushed out as we develop them in the board packets so you have them to review. If there's any questions on any of those, I encourage you members or the part of the community to call the fire station. We're happy to expand on those as necessary, but we feel it's a great avenue to be able to get this information out to the people in the community. We're going to be expanding this as we find additional things to discuss. And we probably have about 30 things on the list right now that we're going to be addressing and hope to have more. We have, as I said, added that stuff to the website. There's already stuff on the website regarding storm information in anticipation of heavy rains and wind, what to do during a public safety power shutdown, emergency supplies list, sand locations, which is relevant to this weekend, potentially, depending on the amount of rain we get. Right now, it's only going to be in one spot in the town, and that's going to be down at the dog park on Rodeo Grounds Road. Also indications there where to buy sandbags if you do and need them. For employment-related things, we have an open recruitment for our Safer Firefighter positions. We're going to be hiring three of those. It's open now until November 12th. We've put an amendment to be able to start them a little early, and we're working towards trying to get them on board by January 1st of 2022. So we're very excited about kind of streamlining that process and adding that to the mix here. We're also continuing with our open reserve firefighter testing. We have only over the last 3 months now had a total of one applicant for that, but we're still aggressively pursuing that. And we, in fact, are getting people out to the local fire academies and other locations to see if we can get more people interested. That person has actually just started within the last week or so. So we're happy to have one additional on board, at least in regards to that. I'm happy to report from the Fire Safe Focus Group for our community that we have just been granted a $25,000 evacuation grant from the San Luis Obispo County Fire Safe Council. That's with Dan Turner. And they're going to be doing the five additional scenarios that remain in big parts of the community for evacuation planning. Some of those would include Park Hill, Moonstone, Cambria West, off Highway 1, things like that. And then various scenarios to that. That would be what happens if we only have the ranch road open, or what happens if we're able to add additional infrastructure. All of this is incredibly important information as we do disaster planning for the community, but will also be just seminal information that's going to be used to populate the things for Zone Haven, which I've already talked about, which is the big grant we got for the county chiefs, which will be applied to the entire county, including Cambria. So we're very excited about how that worked. I also wanted to do a real quick report on the wildland preparedness event that we hosted on October 9th. We had Dan Turner here from the San Luis Obispo Fire Safe Council, a great speaker from the California Insurance Commission office. That was Sally Westlake. And then a number of other speakers, including one of the gentlemen from the local building trades regarding wildland urban interface building materials and what's required secondary to the adoption of our code to protect our community. One of the real interesting things in that process, above and beyond those speakers, was the SIM table that we were able to get with a local grant from the Fire Safe Council, where they were able to do active fire modeling in real time to be able to show, but some of it was real time and then some of it was projected, so they could actually show people how a fire under given scenario and situations would progress through the community. A very eye-opening experience for some. They've never seen anything like that, and we're going to be able to utilize that here locally. I wanted to bring up those two last events, specifically the evacuation grant and the wildland preparedness event, just to do a very big shout out of appreciation to former board member Dave Pearson, who was a key player in getting those here and making those happen. We couldn't have done it without him, but we had a lot of help from people like Dan Turner, members from CERT, directors Tom Gray and Karen D were definitely involved in that. I want to thank everybody for the continued diligence in working not only towards the evacuation stuff, but getting this information out to the community. And we're already looking at doing another event like this in the spring of 2022. So with that, I'm done with my report for this month, and I'm over to you for any questions. And Director Howell, you are muted, sir.
Thank you. Sorry. I have a bad habit of talking to myself, so I keep microphone off most of the time. Sorry. So I was asking President Steidel, are you present? Are you able to take over at this point, or shall I continue?
She's not quite here yet, Don. So she'll come online visually when she's in the seat.
Oh, no problem. I'll no pressure. No pressure, President Steidel. So do we have any questions or commentary for the chief from the directors? Okay. See. Oh, yes, I do. Karen, Director Dean, please.
Thank you, Chief Hollingsworth. And it's very good news to hear that we got the grant to continue on with those evacuation studies. And yes, that wildfire preparedness event was great. And especially the SIM table, I think everybody should watch that so they can see what we may be facing if we have a wildfire. I have a question though on these little bulletins that are in our agenda packet. I've had a lot of neighbors talk to me about vacation rentals and their use of fire pits without the screens being present over the top, and in fact, without the people themselves being present. I was wondering if there's a way to get these bulletins to vacation rental companies to be put in the vacation rental homes. I think that would be good information for people who are not familiar with our area and really haven't had a lot of experience with, you know, these types of fires, to have that information in the home so that hopefully they'll be more careful.
Director Dean, it's an excellent observation, and we are working on that right now, trying to work with the Cambria Council and then also members from the county to get the complete list of the VRBOs, vacation rental homes, and things like that, so we can get these to the property owners. And remember, a lot of the owners don't live in the community, so we've got to reach out to them. We would like it to have it be something that is a mandatory compliance issue in regards to them getting that information whenever the home is rented out for people that don't live in the community. In the meantime, what I am encouraging everyone to do is that if you see it, please report it. And that means call directly to the fire department. Our number is 927-6240. And ask to speak to the crew, let them know it's not an emergency, but this is what the issue is. If the crew is out running other errands or on another emergencies, I encourage you to call 911, tell them it's not an emergency, but this is something they need to check on. This is something that does come into the fire department on a fairly regular basis. And I remind everybody that our goal here is compliance. It's not punitive in nature. So when we get this call, we'll go out and interact with the people. And the vast majority of the time, it's people from out of the area that are not familiar with our ordinance. So where we clue them in, let them know what's going on, and then how they can make their area safe. In the meantime, that's what we're trying to do. And if every time we make that interaction, we get the contact information for the property owners and reach out to them to remind them what they need to do to be in compliance. So we're still trying to get some of that base information regarding who owns everything, and then we'll be putting that out to the owners for all those registered within the community.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's Director Gray.
Yeah. Just a quick question about the wildfire safety event on October 9th. There's a video of it that AGP did. And there's a link to it that I know I got from Dave Pearson. Is that on the carousel at the CCC website? In other words, the top?
I don't know off the top of my head. I believe it's been added to our emergency preparedness site already, but I'll check the website. And if it's not, I'll reach out to Haley and see if we can have it added or have that link added that will direct them to the right location.
That'd be great. That'd be great. Thank you. It was a very good event. A lot of people would like to see it. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Gray. I have just one question. You mentioned trying to achieve a mandatory compliance. How would that proceed? And is there anything that this board can do to assist in that?
Well, when I talk about mandatory compliance, what I'm specifically referencing is in the information packets that go out to the people that rent these, that information is included as something that is required for people to be registered to provide their homes in that capacity. We've made the leap on our code adoption to make that illegal within open burning illegal within the community. However, the verbiage in there is a little bit open in regards to giving the fire chief or the authority having jurisdiction the latitude to weigh specific events based on need or cause. It's done that way on purpose to give someone in my position the authority to work within those confines, but not be completely restricted. However, it may have in recent years, as we get more aggressive with this, led to a little bit of confusion. And so that's why we put out the safety bulletin in the way we did, and why we're trying to get a version of that completed. So push out to all the vacation home owners to be able to have that included. We absolutely can look at that specific mandate in the future fire code adoption, which is done on a 3-year cycle. But in the meantime, I don't want to wait that long. And that's why we're trying to get some of this out to the owners now.
Thank you. At this point, I will call for a public comment on this and then pass this over. President Steidel, by nodding your head, are you about ready to take over?
Whenever you'd like, Vice President Howell, that'd be fine.
Okay, let me see if there's any public comment on this particular item. Before we do that, do we have anything for anybody from public safety? I'm not recognizing any names, so I don't think we have anyone from the Sheriff's Department with us today. So in that event, do we have any, this is our call for public comment on this item, any questions or comments for Chief Hollingsworth? Going once, going twice. Okay, I see no public comment. And do we have any written comment on this item? General Manager Weigold, do we have any written comment on this?
Vice President Howell, there's no written comment for this subject.
Okay, thank you. So at this point, there's my brief moment in the spotlight here. let me pass the baton back over to President Steidel for the rest of the meeting. So President Steidel, it's now the gavel is yours.
Thank you very much, Vice President Howell, and I appreciate so much you being able to take care of that and handle that transition. It's appreciated. With that, I guess we are moving to, then we've gone through the sheriff's and the fire chief's report, correct?
Yes.
So we're moving on to public comment. And this is public comment for items not on the agenda. And the limitation, let's see, I don't have my normal. Wait a moment. Usually I'm using my cell phone for timing. And I was just not set up and prepared for that. So excuse me for just a moment. I'll do that. All right. So GM Weigold. Public comment?
Yes, we have Elizabeth Bettenhausen. Go ahead, Elizabeth.
Thank you very much. I had the distinct pleasure this morning of spending 2 hours on the beach in what's called dense fog. Quite the dramatic experience, I must say, and I won't fill you in on all the details, except to say that there was a fog bowl of stunning magnitude and intensity, and I'll post some photos of that on Facebook. But I want to say here, this morning, the surf was 10 to 12 feet, in addition to the high tide of 5+, and already it was flowing over the sand berm. Saturday, the surf will be 15 feet high. But I want to say something about Monday and Tuesday. Regardless of whether the rain falls from the heavens, the surf on Monday and Tuesday here is supposed to be 25 feet high. And I want to alert everybody, including the CCSD and all the departments, I have no idea, it's not my specialty, to know what that might mean in terms of overflow to the creeks and perhaps up the creeks. But I do know from what I saw this morning that there will be a total overflow of the sand berm at Santa Rosa Creek Beach. And it might well come up to Shamel Park with the surf at 25 feet. In addition to the high tide still around noon on those days. So I say that simply to alert you with this addendum. It is just amazing the diversity of life that we have here in Cambria, apart from the humans, of course, which diversity is ample. But I urge you sometime, if you have the opportunity, simply to go out at this time of year and see what's on the beach. And of course, the breaching dolphins in the ocean show off at their leisure, which they did yesterday. So thank you very much, Madam Chair. I turn it back to you. Welcome. I hope that you can restart your computer at your discretion, relaxing after this meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Bettenhausen. The computer seemed to have been okay for some reason. Zoom was an inaccessible mechanism for me this morning. So hopefully that can be resolved when I get back. Thank you. GM Weichold.
President Steidel, I don't see any other attendees raising their hand. Oh, one more. Tina Dickinson, go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Board. I have a question as to why staff is working in the office and has been, as I understand, for a good long time. Yet, if I go to the office, everything's in lockdown, or anybody else wants to go as a member of this community for whatever reason. Why is it that we are not able to go into the office, yet we can go into any shop or any restaurant or business masked and there's no issue? So when, I mean, I've heard nothing about the opening of the office itself in any board meeting. So could someone please address that? I think we need to know why we can't. Not that I need to come to the office very often at all, but there may be occasion for a number of citizens, residents here, to come to the office as we have in the past. So I'd like an explanation as to why it is in shutdown. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dickinson. Do we have any other attendees who wish to speak? Jim Weigel?
I don't have any other hands raised. We only have one email board comment, and I can turn that one over to you, President Steidel.
All right, thank you. And Mr. Carmel, I believe you're going to provide this for us. Thank you.
I will. We do have one written comment from Holly Ludwigson. I would like to take this opportunity to address the CCSD Board of Directors via President Steidel with my concerns and dismay that since he was hired in June of 2019, our general manager has not been available to ratepayers and staff on Mondays due to an additional unrelated paid job commitment at Yale University. Mr. Weingold's employment at Yale deviates from item 3 in the employment agreement he signed on June 17, 2019, regarding the requirements related to devotion to district business and hours of work. While he was granted an exception to those requirements through December 31, 2019, I feel his teaching commitment at Yale each week can no longer be deemed to be an activity that does not conflict with or materially interfere with his duties as general manager. As a Cambria homeowner, full-time resident, and consistently on-time ratepayer since 2017, I feel it is practically and fiscally inappropriate to extend the brief exception made in 2019. If our general manager is working less than full-time hours, I feel his salary should be adjusted to a part-time rate. I'm guessing that if other staff wanted one day off each week to pursue another career and continue to be paid their full salary by CCSD, the answer would be no. That should also be and should have been the answer to Mr. Weigold as of January 1st, 2020. Sincerely, Holly Ludwigson. I think that's the only comment letter.
Thank you, Mr. Carmel. And I don't see any additional comments. So with public comment being addressed, we can move to our consent agenda. Director Farmer.
Thank you, President Steidel. I'm glad you've been able to join us. I just wanted to ask, just to pursue the question, the query that Ms. Dickinson made about, even though there are members of, there are staff at the office that the office isn't open. I'm sure there's a good reason for it, but perhaps General Manager Weigold could inform us as to why that is, that the public is unable to enter the office for business.
Well, as it was a public comment item, and we don't normally exchange dialogue during public comment, I think that if it's something that the board needs to address as a whole, we can. But other than that, I think we'll probably move on to consent agenda. Thank you. Director Gray, or Mr. Carmel.
Yes, Madam President. David and I have a conflict of interest on agenda item 5C, as Digital West has been a source of income to our law firm in the past year. So we must recuse ourselves from that item if there are questions. I just wanted to get that in the record.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. Director Gray.
Yeah, I'd like item 5F pulled for separate consideration.
All right. Any other items for under consideration that anyone would like to pull? And not seeing any other hands. All right, we'll go ahead and pull item 5F from consent. And what we'll do is address the balance of the consent agenda. Director Farmer. Director Farmer, you're muted.
My apologies. I just want to ask a brief question with regard to 5D, or is that one that we're already pulling?
No, you can certainly, do you need to have a question of clarification?
Right. Well, it's I've already discussed this with our general manager, Mr. Weigold, but I thought in case anyone out there in the public was curious, on page 86, you know, I noticed that the administrative department manager is still on the in the salary schedule, though that that position was terminated, let's say, a little over a year ago by someone who had been with us for a while. And I just, and like I said, Mr. General Manager Weigold and I discussed this. So perhaps in case people out there in the public are curious, Mr. Weigel, just briefly comment on why that particular position is still there on the salary schedule.
Well, Director Farmer, do you want us to pull this so that we can have a conversation? Because that is not consent agendas for, and you've had a conversation with GM Weigel already, and he explained it satisfactorily. I don't understand the need for addressing it if.
Well, I just, like I just
if,
said,
if it has to do with staffing.
Like I just said, I thought it might, people might be interested to know why it is that a position where a person occupied it and that person is gone, but that, and that position, so therefore there's no one in that position, why it's still there and with nobody occupying it. That's all. So I'll just let go. Thank you.
Thank you. Director Gray, did you still have a question, or was it just that was other than, and you're muted also?
I'm sorry, that was I just wanted 5F pulled, so no further questions.
Okay, excellent. Okay, so 5F is pulled, and what we will do then is that I'd entertain a motion for the balance of the consent agenda. A through G with exception of F. Do I hear a motion for approval? Vice President Howell, and I move, second?
I move that the consent agenda A through E and then G be adopted.
Thank you. And a second, Director Dean.
I'll second the motion.
Thank you. And let's see, I almost said Osana. GM Weigel, may we have roll call, please?
Yes, please. On the motion proposed, Vice President Howell.
Say it again.
Vice President Howell, how do you vote?
Sorry. Yes, aye. Thank you.
Director Dean.
Aye.
Director Gray?
Aye.
Director Farmer?
Aye.
Director Farmer, aye. President Steidel?
Aye.
President Steidel, aye. The motion carries 5 ayes to 0.
Thank you. So on the consent agenda, 5, A, B, C, D, E, and G, the motion for acceptance passes with a vote of 5-0. Thank you. And so now we'll address independently the consent agenda item 5F. And GM Weigold, if you could introduce that for us, please.
Yes, President Steidel, agenda item 5F is consideration of adoption of resolution 41-2021 authorizing the continuance of remote teleconference meetings of the legislative bodies of the Cambria Community Services District pursuant to Government Code Section 54953E3. It's recommended that the Board of Directors consider adoption of the resolution to continue authorizing remote teleconference meetings of the legislative bodies of the Cambria Community Services District. Fiscal impact is listed below for a remote teleconference meeting. And a reminder that at the September 24th Board of Directors meeting, the Board of Directors adopted this resolution authorizing remote teleconference meetings, and it must be updated monthly to continue the use of remote communications.
All right. Thank you. What I'll do is move to public comment then. Is there anyone with public comment? I don't see any. All right, bringing it back to the board. Director Gray, you had something that you had wanted to address in this.
Yeah, I'm you can hear me now, right? Good. I wanted to get a little more, maybe have more clarity on sort of the endpoint of meeting by remote. And I'm bringing this up now because I think after this item went onto the agenda, the public health officer in San Luis Obispo County issued a statement about the two criteria basically for lifting the indoor mask mandate. One of them I think has to do with the reaching a certain level, I think is medium yellow or mild yellow on the CDC standards for infection rate, and then also having a stable and fairly low hospitalization rate. I was wondering this is again, the public might be wondering when we're gonna go back to in-person meetings. This would be not be a bad time to make a statement that when the county lifts its indoor mask mandates, we go back to in-person meetings or some statement to that effect. Because otherwise I know it's a 30-day extension. You know, we can go indefinitely with 30-day extensions, but I think we need to sort of make some kind of statement, or if not now, then quite soon, to say when it is we're going to go back to in-person meetings. And I think the criteria as laid out by the county is probably enough to actually trigger it. And also it might also remove the grounds for having the remote meetings.
I guess what I am not sure of in the context of this is how what the offsetting impact is for the state requirements or the extension by the state, whether it's something that mm-hmm. Can be accepted to by at county level. Mr. Carmel, is there something here that differentiates this in any way?
One of the requirements is that the governor's state of emergency declaration is in place. Once that goes away, we can't do this anymore. The other finding is made by the board itself that having the meetings poses an imminent threat to the public and to the board and to the audience and staff. That can be made without necessarily having orders in place. I think it's probably a more difficult finding to make. I think what the health officer said was currently we're in the orange tier.
Orange tier.
And we'll have to be in the yellow tier for a 10-day period before the mask mandate will drop.
Right.
When that situation occurs, I think the board will have an opportunity to revisit the issue. In the meantime, we put these in place so there's an option to have these virtual meetings. When these resolutions are in place, you can still have an in-person meeting. In other words, you don't have to run the full 30 days and hold these things virtually. Mm-hmm. But again, when the facts militate revisiting the issue, and I think we'll all know when that is, we'll revisit the issue. I know that in some of my other agencies, there's been discussions of waiting until the end of the year. But again, that's just speculation based on what they think is going to happen. And you can't predict this coronavirus. You know, there are deviants all over the place. And it's just a matter of time, and the time will come. But I think we all have to be mindful that eventually we're going back to in-person meetings. And when those facts are available, then we'll no longer do these resolutions and we'll move back to in-person meetings.
Thank you very much, Mr. Carmel. Vice President Hallam.
Well, with all due respect to Director Gray, I think right now the issue at hand is whether we go for another 30 days. The broader question, I don't think, is actually in order at the present time. So I move consideration of adoption of Resolution 41-2021, authorizing continuance of remote teleconference meetings of the legislative bodies of the Cambria Community Services District pursuant to Government Code Section 54953E3.
Thank you, Vice President Howell. Do I have a second for that?
I'll second that.
Director Dean. Thank you. And so, GM Weigold, may we, I keep trying to say Osana, GM Weigold, may we please move to roll call on this?
Yes, President Steidel, on the motion of accepting Resolution 41-2021, Vice President Howell, how do you vote?
Aye.
Thank you, Vice President Howell, aye. Director Dean?
Aye.
Director Dean, aye. Director Gray?
Aye.
Director Gray, aye. Director Farmer?
Aye.
Director Farmer, aye. President Steidel?
Aye.
President Steidel, aye. So the vote is 5-0 in favor of Resolution 41-2021.
All right. Thank you very much, GMY Gold. So the resolution 41-2021 authorizing continuance of the remote teleconferencing meetings per Government Code 54953E3 is passed 5-0. Thank you all very much. So we move then on to regular business. And the first item under regular business is 6A. Jim Weigel, will you introduce to us, please?
Yes, President Steidel. Agenda item 6A is discussion and consideration of the strategic plan status report and update. Staff recommends that the board of directors discuss and consider the monthly updates to the strategic plan. Attached is the strategic plan grid with items in red that reflect changes since the last report. There is one change on page 99, objective number one, that the R&I ad hoc committee addressing Next Enterprise or the Next Enterprise Fund ad hoc is now scheduled for a change, and it's going to be October 26th, not October 20th.
Director Dean, was there something specific to that you wanted to add?
Yes, the date that we held our first meeting in this is incorrect as well. We met on October 7th.
So are there items of this strategic plan update that any of the directors would like to focus to or discuss further, or if there are any additions or corrections? And not seeing any. I'll go to public comment, please. Director Farmer.
Yes, I just want to mention with regard to achieving a balanced policy for growth and resources, on the first line there, comments in red, Directors Farmer and Gray to form an ad hoc committee. We have had a few meetings in this regard, and we're having one again tomorrow morning, and hopefully in the effort to pursue ultimately determining who would be best available to become a forest ecologist, a forest arborist, a forest manager for hopefully the entire community of Cambria. I think that's the ultimate goal that we're moving toward. And we have some very knowledgeable people that are contributing to this. And like I say, we'll be having a meeting tomorrow and hopefully have something even more productive to contribute the next time we do the update on the strategic plan. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Director Firm. Just out of curiosity, what would be the crossover of that with the Las Tablas Creek and the Cobell and all of those other items that are going forward for with a professional forester to cover the forest in its totality, not just specific to Cambria?
Well, let me say this. I have a feeling that I know Tom has his hand up, and perhaps he's probably going to say, well, what we should be addressing with regard to the forest manager are just properties that are owned by the district. But I'd like to think that overall, we'd like to, how could I say it, address the entire health, natural health of the community. But that's just me, and I'm sure Tom has a further comment. Thank you.
Director Gray?
Yeah, I just to avoid some confusion here, what Director Farmer is referring to is specifically the ad hoc committee that was formed in March to investigate ways of funding and doing forest management for the region, for Cambria as a whole. And so that's on a somewhat different track. I think he and I haven't met yet on the strategic plan objective, and we will be, I'm sure. The one thing that might be worth mentioning, I don't want to go off track and talk about something that's not on the strategic plan, but the meeting tomorrow is quite important, but to address President Stidell's question, it is about the Resource Conservation District setting up some kind of regional, and regional meaning this part of the county, maybe the South County too, regional forestry project where there is a forester who's hired primarily under a grant from the state to advise property owners and stakeholders, including the CCSD, but including other property owners on forest management. So it is an extension actually of what is going on, what has been going on at the Covell Ranch, taken to a larger scope. And we're gonna be discussing that at an ad hoc committee meeting tomorrow. And Devin Best, who's the chief executive of the RCD, is gonna be there. And I think we're gonna be represented, FFRP, Green Space, and others, and Forest Committee will be there too. So that's, we're talking about the work. Hopefully we'll have something to say about that with some finality pretty soon about that project that started back in March. But that's what this is.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for the overview on that.
Yeah.
Are there any other areas of the strategic plan information that we've, or update that we've been provided in this review that anyone would like to address? Or, as I said, if there are any additions or corrections or questions? No. All right. And there appear not to have been any public comment items. I'll wait for a moment.
President Seidel, there's no written comment on this item.
All right.
And appear to be no hands raised in the meeting.
Right. Okay. With that being the case, then, we have no additional considerations in terms of the strategic plan status report update. It was a matter of discussion and reviewing the update, the monthly update. All right. Thank you. We'll move on then from agenda item 6A to agenda item 6B. And GM Weichold, would you introduce that for us, please?
Yes, President Steidel. Agenda item 6B is discussion and consideration of Ordinance 04-2021, adding Chapter 6.09, Mandatory Organic Waste Disposal Reduction to the Cambria Community Services District Code to comply with the requirements of SB 1383. It is recommended that the Board of Directors discuss, consider, and introduce Ordinance 04-2021, adding Chapter 6.09 to the CCSD code by title only, and waive further reading in order to comply with the requirements of Senate Bill 1383 or SB 1383. There's no direct fiscal impact as a result of this item. This is essentially a requirement for state code that we're implementing, but our counsel, David Hirsch, is standing by in order to answer any questions that the board members may have.
Thank you, GM Weigel. What I'd like to do first then is move to public comment. And do we have any public comment?
We have Elizabeth Bettenhausen. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. I certainly am glad the state of California is moving ahead with this. I think the less organic crap we have produced, the better. We're all off. And the requirement that it be reduced is one good way to motivate people who are a little hesitant to check out what they leave in terms of food waste, which is by the triple million tons in this country daily. I do want to note that even though complying with the state law entails no fiscal impact immediately for the CCSD, I appreciate the listing of the four different variables under future fiscal impact in the discussion by the staff. And I alert people that this will entail, according to the staff, a Prop 218 event coming up in the not distant future in order to raise the money for the franchise, which is not what's under revision by the county in terms of Integrated Waste Management Authority, but rather the waste pickup people, in order to make sure that they are paid adequately then to carry a lot less organic waste away. This is very interesting to me because if you're going to produce less organic waste and have less of it put in the recycling even, well, I guess we probably won't do that. We'll just switch our organic crap from gray to green. I suppose that's an advance on planet Earth's behalf, although I certainly am not sure that that's the case. I look forward very much to Mr. Hirsch explaining all the complexities of this law, and I compliment Mr. Carmel for being able to hand it off to a partner. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Bettenhausen. Is there any other public comment, GM Weigel?
It doesn't appear there are any other public comment, and there is no written public comment.
All right. Then I'll bring it back to the board for discussion. Does the board, anyone on the board, have any questions or any specifics that Mr. Hirsch is available to address? I'm not seeing any hands. All right. Well, with that being the case, then what we would be looking at is reading this by title owner only and waiving further reading. Is there anyone who would like to take that? Oh, Director Farmer? You're muted.
That, thank you. Sorry, once again. I just want to make a couple of brief comments. Obviously, there's not going to be any fiscal impact on the district, but since I'm noticing about halfway down, there are going to be some fee increases. I do want to say one thing, that when we've had fee increases, they've been relatively minimal, and I think we can be grateful for that. But I'm noticing here that initially, you know, this bill was signed into law of September of 2016, over 5 years ago, and we're now implementing it. I recall visiting a friend of mine up in Seattle in spring of 2009, and they had already implemented this. In other words, the green waste can, you could put all kinds of whatever was left from your, you know, kitchen, whatever you were doing in the kitchen, you could put in the green waste can. It wasn't just from what was going on outside in the garden or, you know, cleaning up the yard or something like that. So I just wanted to mention that also. With regard to what's left over in the kitchen, I just want to encourage any, and this doesn't have to do, let's say, with the animal products, but whatever it is that you have in the kitchen that's left over, maybe it's gotten beyond where it's edible. Let's say, you know, lettuce or any kinds of vegetables along those lines that you might have that you're just going to throw away. I might encourage members of the community, you know, especially if you have a garden or you have potted plants, if you have a way out in the yard to do a compost pile, because what have you, know, get some, go to the nursery, get a bag of soil, put whatever it is from the kitchen, you know, combine that, even if it's just a hole in the ground, and just turn it over every once in a while, add to it, maybe do two holes in the ground, so to speak. And so you let one to continue to develop and then begin a new one, and then take that product, which is extremely fragrant and very, just a great way. It's very healthy for the plants. And then you can put that in your potted plants, put that around the plants that you have in the ground, work them into the soil. And it makes for much healthier, like I said, either potted plants or plants in the soil to utilize a compost pile. So this just kind of brought that to my attention. So I just wanted to pass that on to the community at large. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Director Farmer. And it's all excellent information for the community as a whole to be familiar with and to be directing themselves towards. I agree. Thank you. Director Gray.
Yeah, thank you, President Stidell. I had a question. There is no, you know, obvious fiscal impact or large sizable fiscal impact, but there is an enforcement responsibility that is spelled out for the district for CCSD, which is more, I think, than is being done now by the district in terms of seeing, making sure, I think, especially probably with commercial and multifamily customers, especially making sure that these rules are being followed. I'm kind of curious, does this entail any extra staffing or something that can be quantified?
I believe the expectation is that IWMA is going to be, as the delegee of the district, doing a lot of those different efforts. Mm-hmm. We did have to address enforcement otherwise, as far as the stuff in the ordinance relating to civil penalties, which don't begin until January 1st, 2024. That's a requirement that the state has that we have to include in the ordinance. Mm-hmm. But as a practical matter, I think the way it's going to work in most jurisdictions of the county, except for the county, I guess, since they pulled out of IWMA, is that IWMA is going to have the expertise, mm-hmm, and do those different tasks in terms of monitoring, inspections and so on. And if there's a problem at some point, again, after 2024, they would then be looking to the district to issue a civil fine, penalty, things like that, if there's a problem with compliance.
So the IWMA is the designated entity for the general manager, essentially, in terms of the language of this ordinance.
As a practical matter. IWMA has already provided, for example, a draft letter to create that delegation to them that they've sent out to the various entities for use. So that's pretty much how it's set up. Obviously, it's a very complicated new law. And the requirements that we're adopting by virtue of this ordinance are complicated in terms of what then must be enforced. But that's where the expertise is coming in from IWMA and their staffing. And of course, they are increasing their fees accordingly. And it's correct. Those are going to end up showing up, I'm sure, in rates. So it's quite an effort, obviously. Statewide, not just here. The same scheme is being adopted by hundreds of cities, counties, and special districts throughout the state as a result of the mandates that the state has created. And as was mentioned in the staff report, the ordinance itself is based upon work done by a consultant, HF&H, and that same consultant was hired by the state of California earlier to create model ordinances, model contract provisions with haulers and so on. And so basically we're working with F&H when it comes to what we're adopting. But again, I looked at a staff report from a city recently, and they talked in the staff report how it was based upon the model ordinance that was created at the state level. And that model ordinance at the state level was developed by the same consultant IWMA is using here.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hirsch.
Vice President Howell, you have a question?
A question or observation? So Mr. Hirsch, the only thing that I'm a little bit, I'm just wondering, in the discussion, the section regarding enforcement, there's a lot of reference to the district, but in the definitions, the only reference I see is to the district enforcement official. So I understand from the discussion that where the reference is to the district, it can refer to the delegee of the district that we have contracted with. But I'm just wondering if maybe had that been left off of the definitions, or is it even important?
I believe that the enforcement official is designated by the general manager.
Right.
And that's to come as far as administratively implementing the ordinance. We're also going to have to create some procedures. Special districts, for the most part, I don't think have had those kind of provisions developed, which cities and counties do have in place as far as civil fine ordinances, for example, where you would also provide, for example, hearing procedures for people that might dispute a civil penalty that's being imposed. So those are to come.
Thank you. I think as you were talking, I also had a bit of a moment of enlightenment. So I think we're good. I read a little further when it speaks of the responsible entity for enforcement, and it does call out specifically the enforcement officials and or their designee.
So keep in mind that the first 2 years from January 1st, 2022 to January 1st, 2024, the process will be to provide education and so on and not be punitive in terms of issuing penalties. That won't start for a couple of years, so we have some breathing room as far as putting those kind of things in place.
I would point out, I think that's a very good provision because it's going to take a while. We're going to have to change a few of the way we do things, and it's going to take a while for us to learn.
Yeah, habits are going to change.
Yeah.
The chiefest of those, the chiefest of those is that we have a bigger responsibility to keep our recyclable stuff in the blue bin, to keep it uncontaminated, because that's where we could be fined. If anything organic or anything non-recyclable gets in there, I envision some issues. So that's an area where I think people have to change their habits, and possibly the size of their refuse containers as well. Observation.
No, good one. Are there any other questions or items that people would like to discuss relative to this agenda? Item 6B. All right, then what I will do to go ahead and move this forward is move to adopt ordinance 042021, adding chapter 6.09, mandatory organic waste disposal reduction, to the Cambria Community Services District Code to comply with requirements of SB 1383. And waive further reading.
It would be to introduce the ordinance, not adopt.
Introduce it.
Thank you. Introduce, and with the vote adopt. Shall I repeat it, or will it? Will that be sufficient?
Go ahead.
A second.
And yeah. Director Farmer, were you indicating a second, or were you? The Director Gray.
Right. I was just going to second it with the introduction,
of.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah.
All right, Director Farmer.
I got in a little bit late here. I just want to make one comment, and this may sound like idiosyncratic, but I have this habit when I'm going out on a walk with Chiron to just look in people's trash and blue bin and see, well, what the heck are they throwing away? And I am really surprised, number one, at how much trash and recycling is being generated these days, but also what people throw in the recycling that shouldn't even be in there. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because I believe it was Vice President Howell who mentioned about needing to educate the populace, because you would think it would be common sense, but I can guarantee you just by observation that people using common sense out there is not necessarily happening. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Farmer. All right, we've had the motion and a second. GM Weigold, would you take roll, please?
Yes, President Steidel. President Steidel, on the motion to introduce Ordinance 04-2021, how do you vote?
Aye.
President Steidel, aye. Director Gray?
Aye.
Director Gray, aye. Director Farmer?
Aye.
Director Farmer, aye. Director Dean?
Aye.
Director Dean, aye. And Vice President Howell?
Aye.
Vice President Howell, aye. The motion carries 5-0.
Thank you, Jan Weigel. And so Ordinance 04-2021, the organic waste disposal reduction for Cambria Services Community District in compliance with SB 1383 passes on a vote of 5-0. Thank you. All right, we'll move on from regular business then to our manager reports. And a call initially for any public comment relative to the GM Finance Manager's Utilities Report.
Elizabeth Bettenhausen, go ahead.
Thank you very much. I am curious, number one, about the my apparent inability to understand the website, because I understood from your last meeting, or perhaps two meetings ago, that there would be a specific page now for the skate park on the CCSD website, and I am totally unable to find it. And I have searched at least quasi-diligently. So, and I noticed in the general manager's report today, there is reference to the probability of getting the final report from Spahn on the skate park today. Once again, a nice coincidence of the meeting and the, I assume, the receipt of the report, because that's what was reported in print. So I look forward to an update on the skate park. Any news was not necessarily good news, but we certainly need good news on the update on the skate park. Number two, I'm looking at the update on the well levels for October 15th, which is, of course, not yet an end of the month reading, but certainly there are two levels there that are of some concern regarding the stages. A couple of them are actually in stage five rather than stage four of your water accountability mechanism now. I'm not suggesting at all that I think you ought to be declaring stage five with a huge amendment to your agenda today. I'm not saying that at all. And it could well be that the rain that comes on, we hope, on Monday and Tuesday will also change some of the well levels significantly. But I look forward to your next meeting in November, let's say, when there is a little more explanation for the public of how it is determined what stage you are declaring us to be in. I know that it's all worked out with algorithms and charts, very clear as can be. It's just somewhat incomprehensible for many people with whom I've spoken. So if you would do us the favor again of not only transparency, but clarity and simplicity, how about setting up those two standards in addition so that it is able for us public people to understand what exactly are you doing to determine the rankings of the various criteria for each stage, because you give us the criteria, but you do not tell us how you weight the criteria when you make the decision. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Van Housen. And do we have any other public comment?
And President Steidel, there's no written comment, and I don't see any other comment from the meeting here.
All right. Thank you very much, GM Weigel. What we'll move on to the general manager's report. GM Weigel.
Thank you, President Steidel. So we're both excited and cautious about the prediction for rain over the next couple of days. We may lead to a revision in the water conservation stage, but we'll see how that turns out depending on the rain situation. But we're also very cognizant of the last time that we experienced an atmospheric river, which was January 28 and 29, riveted in my brain because of the damage it did to the district here. So I wanted to let you know that the staff has taken a lot of effort again to prep for the storm. The most late recent prediction was only about an inch, but as we've seen, that can vary over the county drastically. I've been in touch with the Slo County Public Works head, and they've got an emergency crew ready to go if we have to experience any kind of major flooding here on West Main Street again, and require the use of the pumps there. All the CCSD departments have prepared for the storm, mostly on the Sunday and Monday event. The wastewater plant is lowering their effluent pond levels down to the lowest levels there, so that if we see another increase in influent coming into the plant, we'll be able to handle that without a big issue. And they're putting the other emergency actions that they put into place for the lessons learned from the last storm as well. Over on facilities and resources at the rodeo grounds, they've removed everything off of the floor again, raised it up onto bench tops, desktops, electronics up. So should the Santa Rosa Creek overflow yet again, we'll be in a better position saving a lot of our equipment there. And of course, the fire department's on alert as well. I talked to the on-shift group that's going to be there on Friday myself yesterday, and so they're all prepared as well. As was mentioned on the skate park, we did receive the, since this report went to press last week, we did receive the final report from Spahn Ranch, our skate park designer. I can report that our district engineer is going to be holding a pre-planning meeting with the county on Monday the 25th. And then together with that information, staff will be better prepared to augment the presentation by Spahn Ranch. And we'll do that through a special board meeting on Saturday, October 30th at 10 a.m. Our goal is to post the staff report for that, that it'll include the Spahn Ranch presentation, as well as embedded in the staff report some comments from our district engineer, so that the board can receive the presentation, discuss and consider it as well, and ask questions. That concludes the highlights of my general manager report. As our facilities and resources manager is on vacation this week, I'll make a brief report on that. As normal, Carlos has done a photo montage of all the things he's worked on the past month. But the big significant effort was on tree work on the Fiscalini Ranch. And once that was done, that took 2 to 3 weeks. And thanks to Fiscalini, Friends of Fiscalini Ranch, the FFRP, because they helped cover some of the bills for some of the tree work that required outside help. And so they picked up the tab, a very significant amount of money in the tens of thousands for some help there, because as you recall, it was up about 80 trees that we had to dismantle and take apart that were felled as a result of the January storm. In addition to the tree work, there were obviously conclusion of that, that the F&R staff was able to get at some of the more detailed maintenance work, primarily through the various trails around town. And you see some of the work in the photos there, including over at the pedestrian bridge. And then, as is always the case, we're continually dismantling and working with law enforcement on our homeless encampments that seem to pop up around town. And so, as has been the case, it's a long process for each individual incident, because we have to notify law enforcement. They have to come out. Then there's a posting that we have to do and give time for the encampment folks to dismantle their camp and then potentially store their belongings as well. Pending your questions, that concludes my report and the F&R report.
Thank you, Jim Weigold. I just wanted to extend a little more information regarding the special meeting that you had referenced for October 30th. The intent of that meeting is for the board to be able to formally accept the report from Spahn Ranch, which it contracted for, and then to have some initial review of the information and discussion, because of course we can't have a discussion as a body about it until we meet as a board. The output of that is not a decision about the skate park. The output is for the board to make a decision about submitting it to the PROS Commission for their review and requesting their feedback in review of the material. Additionally, if there are items that individual board members feel that they would like to discuss about putting forward as direction from the board that they would like to have PROS take into consideration in their review of the document. That is something that would take part of the conversation at board meeting on the 30th also. So I ask you to think in terms of that as you go forward to that date, that meeting. Just for your information also, Vice President Hell and I have made a conscious decision to target that meeting for Saturday to make the date available to the younger constituents in our community who've been very much involved in this and for the public too. So that's the purpose of being on a Saturday, which isn't always something we're, we can either can accommodate or would normally target for. So I just wanted to relay that additional information out to the community. Director Farmer.
Yes, thank you, President Steidel. I just want to commend staff. I want to commend you and Vice President Howell for setting up this meeting for a Saturday so the youth can attend, so they can comment and show their enthusiasm for this project in a way that we necessarily haven't seen, and to allow some people that have already contributed, you know, monies to the skate park, to allow them to attend as well. Saturday morning might be a little bit easier for some folks that than on a weekday. So I just wanted to mention that, and thank you so much. Also, with regard to the rain this weekend, you know, initially it was going to be, let's say, 2 to 6 inches of rain. According to PG&E meteorologist John Lindsay, it's now down to 1 to 3 inches of rain, let's say, from, let's say, mid-Sunday to Sunday evening to sometime Monday morning, Monday afternoon. So we can only hope that it's, let's say, 2 inches of rain spread out over a fairly sufficient amount of time, as opposed to 2 inches of rain, let's say, coming down in about 8 hours, which could be slightly problematic. So I just wanted to update the weather report. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Farmer. Any other comments before we, or questions before we move on to the finance manager's report? Right, not seeing any, then Ms. Duffield. Welcome.
Okay, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you, President Steidel. So the finance manager's report is for the month of September. I think probably the only highlight I should provide is earlier in your board's consent agenda, you approved an agent authorization designation for submitting to the state of California our disaster relief application. So I had that all ready to go. So as soon as your board approved that, I sent that email to them. So we have submitted our project application with all of our January, February storm activity. So in future finance manager report and probably the general manager's report, will be reporting out on the status of that claim and the process that we have to go through. But, you know, it'll probably be a 6 to 9 to maybe 12 month process, I'm going to guess, but that's just kind of my guess right now. I have no other information thus far on our submittal about 6 months ago on the COVID related costs that we submitted to FEMA. So that, as far as I'm aware, is still under their review. And we're just waiting to hear something back from them. On the Tyler Financial System upgrade, we're kind of coming to the end of that process with Tyler, and then it's going to become, you know, our challenge to put it into practice. So the most recent module that we are putting into practice is the budget module, and you'll be seeing that next week go to the Finance Committee, because our first quarterly report will be from the spreadsheets, will not be the green colored spreadsheets you've been accustomed to reading and understanding. It's going to be a whole new set of documents and format that everybody will have to read and understand and get used to the new format, but it is system generated. All of our budgetary information has been put in there. We've put in some purchase orders, so you'll see some encumbrances. So that'll be a whole new process that we'll be talking about at the second meeting in November, and we'll have the first look at it on Tuesday's Finance Committee meeting. The next steps for Tyler would be to get the fixed asset module into practice. So that's been configured. So we're moving into that direction in the next couple of weeks to get that all configured and into our, whether it's a quarterly practice or an annual practice, but just getting that module familiar and, you know, getting it into practice for us. As far as the audit, we're still on track for the auditors to be out here the first week of November. The second week of November, because the first will be, I believe, on a Monday. So it's November 8th that they'll be out here. So it'll be the second week of November. So we're still on track to have them be out here to get the field work started and get moving on the audit. I don't have anything else for you, so I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
All good news. Congratulations on moving things forward too within Tyler. It'll be a learning experience and interesting to see our budget now that we've gotten familiar with using the format, to see our budget in a new format and to orient ourselves to that. Thank you. All right. Any questions for Ms. Duffield? All right. I'm not seeing any hands raised. So, Mr. Danzo, good to see you. Your utilities report, please.
Yes, thank you, President Seidel. Good afternoon, everyone. Can everyone hear me okay? Mm-hmm. Okay, sorry. First of all, I'm surprised to be giving their utilities report this early. So I'm a little bit sure.
I know.
I'm ready to present it. So these are for activities that took place in September. So obviously if you have any questions of things that happened, shortly after that, you're welcome to ask me about those as well. But starting with the wastewater plant, I want to commend the guys that did some repairs around the plant. That seems to be the theme recently within the last few weeks here is things are starting to just little, some minor to close to major things breaking down, but the guys are able to repair them in-house. A couple of examples was the influent pump number two is shown in your on figure A there in the utilities report. Tim and Tony commend them that they were able to help rebuild get the parts and help rebuild that pump and get it up and running. Especially now that with the rains that we anticipate coming within the next few days here, which I'm hoping we will get the 3 inches that were was predicted, and hopefully get it over a period of a week. So, those are important to us for all of those pumps to be pumping, because we do get a large amount of infiltration and inflow coming to the plant whenever there's a rain event that happens. There was also a somewhat major communications fix that needed to take place. We had to bring out. Andy Thompson for that, which the company is Tough Automation. He was able to fix the influent flow control that gives us data to our SCADA. And so there was a problem with the communication line that he was able to fix. So those are I wanted to highlight those as well for the months of September. In our collection system, the guys are continuing to do their jetting and cleaning of the collection system maintenance. Collection system maintenance guys are doing a great job doing that, systematically working through town, You can see one of the figures there, like roots were taken out from the collection system. The new thing that came out today, I just wanted to tell you, is kind of funny. There was a couple of curtain rods that made it to our sewer system. I don't know how those get there, but that was the latest thing. So if that doesn't make the picture, I mentioned it to you here. Also, we're investigating a way to help seal the manholes, especially over near the creek. So figure D in the utilities report shows us using that particular product to help seal the joints of the manholes. So, you know, when we do get the big rain events, that it doesn't leak through the manhole and then eventually get into our system. So that picture there of me and three other guys looking, it doesn't take that many guys to do that work. That was just me. I wasn't doing anything. I was just inspecting to see that, good, the thing is working. So, but it normally doesn't take that much, but we do need a minimum number of guys whenever there's a confined space entry for a situation like that. Moving on to our water system, a couple of things to report. There were some trees that were removed or trimmed, I should say, in the Lemert tank area that was starting to encroach a little bit. And we got a lot of good help from the Fire Safe Council that were able to remove those dead trees for us. And I wanted to highlight too that there was a leak on one of the disinfection tanks for our Santa Rosa well number 4. And I bring this up, you know, because this highlights the importance of a secondary containment, you know, in all of our chemical or hazardous waste tanks. There's always supposed to be, there is, and for those who don't, they should have a secondary containment. And it's a good thing we had one of those because it leaked into the secondary containment. Good thing about it was we do have an agreement with Brentag that supplies these tanks, and they were able to replace it at no additional cost to the district. Some upgraded radios were installed at the Pine Knolls tank. This will help us with our improved communications with both water and wastewater SCADA systems. Several distribution leaks were repaired as well in light of all of this work that was happening. And we are also trying to figure out ways to deter theft, where we've started to see some problems with theft over in one of our solar array communication sites over near San Simeon Creek Road. So the security measures that we've employed in the past doesn't seem to be working. So we're looking for ways to bolster those as well. Moving on to the reclamation facility. As far as our water supply status, you know, we're on track as far as our allocations from both San Simeon Creek and Santa Rosa Creek. The San Simeon Creek wells are, you know, kind of hovering around average based on this year, of course, based on the time of the year. Again, we compare averages based on the season. So we are trending, you know, right around the average. And as far as preparations for the water reclamation facility, we are still in a stage 4, and we don't recommend changing stage 4 until we get a difference, you know, any differences through rain and differences that would be remaining. So, we definitely still recommend staying on stage 4, and we are still prepared. And because of that, one of the things that we're tasked to do is to continue to prepare the water reclamation facility for operation should it be required. We're doing basic maintenance. We've moved our reverse osmosis filters on site, ready to be installed. We're also doing basic maintenance like cleaning out the stainless steel, purging the stainless steel lines for any condensation, installing new air filters, reconditioning some valves that are on the system as well. And there's a term there that called repinning that I think I need to explain, because it's a industry jargon that that slipped by me when I was helping to write this. So repinning, what that is all of the membranes are actually little tiny straws in the inside those membrane containers. And whenever there's a problem with one of the straws, if you will, they need to be pinned. Literally, there's a special pin that's used to fix those if there is a problem. And so we stated that there it shows no need of repinning. So it means that the filters are in good condition, the microfiltration system. And then I added a new category called in-stream flow study and adaptive management plan. And you know, the work that Cindy Cleveland is continuing to do is she's establishing a baseline for our for adaptive management plan, which you know, it was a requirement from our SEIR to continue to do monitoring based on the AMP, our adaptive management plan. And the basics of that work right at this moment, since the facility is not operating, she is continuing to do baseline monitoring, and the baseline monitoring of the reaches, the riparian reaches, like all of the areas near the creek of both Van Gordon and San Simeon, and things like monitoring surveys of red-legged frogs, tidewater gobies, and other riparian vegetation. And right now, you know, there's the focus of the monitoring is establishing a baseline, because this has been a good year for that. And the final annual report will be released in December because she's really close to completing a full year's monitoring cycle. There's not a whole lot to report as far as Gus Yates's work regarding the hydrology with the installation of those transducers there. All I can tell you right now is that it is following the typical dry season trend. There hasn't been any pumping activities there because there hasn't been any irrigation. And our efforts to try to get a pump test going, it turns out we're not going to do that this time. So that's as far as that's concerned. And we did have a kickoff meeting in September for the task one of the in-stream flow study with Stillwater Sciences. So that project is moving. They've completed their historical document review. And we do have a meeting scheduled with our technical advisory committee. We've identified those who are going to be part of that committee, and we're going to be kicking off that meeting soon, in a week. Couple of last things for conservation and permits. You can see the data there relating to our current situation with the trends or the data criteria of Santa Rosa well level number 4. That's what SR4 means. Windsor Bridge East water level, Windsor Bridge West water level, and the gradient between SS2 and I'm blanking out. So and 94. So anyway, that all still kind of follows the gradient is the only one there that would be considered a stage 5 at this moment, but the average San Simeon wells are stage 3. The Windsor Bridge East is stage 3. The Santa Rosa well level number 4 is considered stage 1, obviously, which is somewhat odd, but I'm not surprised. I do want to do a special commendation for Melissa Bland. She participated in getting her what's called a qualified water efficiency landscaper certification, and she was able to pass the exam, the QWEL exam, and got a 99% on the exam. I told her that it wasn't quite perfect though. So, but she passed, and so I commend her for that. And she's so now she is able to actually help with those kind of surveys and help really give good pointers as far as water efficient landscapes. What we're doing now that was as part of our stage four efforts is we've launched what we used to call water audits. We're calling it something a little bit more accurate. We're calling it water use efficiency walkthroughs. And some people in our community, and we're offering this to both residential and commercial. And we've already had some really good value from this. One of them, they discovered because of the survey, they were able to discover a leak and was able to save approximately 300 gallons of water. So that service is available. It's available on request. People are slowly starting to take advantage of this as both Megan and Melissa are starting to do more of these walkthroughs. So I encourage everyone to participate in that. The last thing, there's a permit counter activity as listed there. The new thing regarding vacation rental will serves. And I just want to clarify that, you know, that when we say vacation rental will serves, what this is, it's a classification for those who want to become a vacation rental, because you need to register, you need to apply with the county to become a vacation rental. And in order for them to complete the process, we need to give them a will serve designating them as a vacation rental. But there's no structural changes. I mean, you know, they're not doing any remodels. That's not what this is for. That falls under the other category, but they're not doing any of that. It's just for them to so that they can apply to become a vacation rental through the county, and we participate with that by issuing them what's called a vacation will serve. So that I believe is the highlights of the utilities report. And again, I'm available for any questions or clarifications.
Thank you very much, Mr. Danzo. Lots of information. And I do appreciate the clarification on vacation will serves. That term will serve, although it's not something designated by us, certainly causes enough confusion for folks in the community. And in this case and in others, the will serve is just merely acknowledging that there is water service to a position already when the county comes and asks a question about any kind of application that may be being made with them, in this case, vacation rentals. So it isn't often, we actually have the names of folks within your staff who've been kind of going above and beyond to really take care of their house, as you referred to it, which I thought was wonderful. So, Please pass on our thanks and congratulations to Tony and Tim for the work that they did and our appreciation for that. And also congratulations to Ms. Bland on her QWEL certification. I'm not surprised she got a 99. One thing I wanted to ask about, and this is just a perception and ignorance on my part, but in the collection system information, the one picture, the figure D, where the extraction hose is down, the big yellow hose is down there, is that actually an individual down in there, or is that just some kind of pump float device thing that's sitting next to it? It almost looks like it's someone wearing a tank.
Yeah, so no, that is Tony that's in that hole right now. And And that yellow pipe is air. It's an air line that because we need to pump air in there. And yeah, so that's him inside the manhole, and we are up there looking down on him, cheering him on. So, because
Well, I have to say that probably brought an enlightenment to at least myself and maybe others, and I'm sure most of the community, to the levels at which are the people who work for the CCSD provide services to us and what they have to do to maintain those services for us. So actually, I appreciate very much having had a chance to see that picture. It brings a little reality to the situation. Mm-hmm. So please thank Tony.
Yes.
Are there any questions? Director Farmer.
Yes, thank you, Vice President Steidel. Excuse me, President Steidel, and I want to apologize if anybody can hear the tree cutting that's going on out here. They've been here since early this morning, and so just wanted to mention that. So first, I want to thank Ray for the clarification on the will service for vacation rentals. It was something I brought up with General Manager Weigold, and he stated that Ray would bring this up, so I want to thank Ray for doing so. Also, Ray, if I could just get, and I also want to thank you for mentioning the report from Cindy Cleveland. Is there a way that you can, considering the fact that we've, other than the atmospheric weather that we had in January, with regard to the drought conditions, in Cindy's reports, what is the health of the tidewater goby and the red-legged frog and other creatures that live near the creek, as well as the natural vegetation around the creek? What is the health of that that she has found as, you know, as a result of conditions that nature has been dealing with recently? Can you give us an update on that?
Sure. So keep in mind that the purpose of her monitoring and the purpose of these environmental surveys is not to assess, you know, is this good or bad. The focus of the assessment is to establish a baseline, whatever it is. So it is what it is. What she did tell me is that the actual species that she's seeing, you know, both vegetation and biological, they are what she would expect to see for the time of the year it's at. Like earlier in the year, for example, she told me, oh yeah, there's a bunch of fish, you know. And I think she told me like the number of fish was like a ridiculous number. And then, you know, she'll notice red-legged frogs, and she'll mention the number. But there's not really a number for her to compare per se, like each year, from year to year, not yet at least, as far as like her work is concerned, because this is the first year of establishing the baseline for the AMP. So once that baseline is established, then we do have a way to compare it with hard data, not just anecdotal data from past studies that don't really quantify it. So that's what she has told me about it. So, but again, like the focus of it is to establish a baseline and to assess the health of the, you know, from year to year. It's really hard to tell that at the moment. So, but she is observing them as we.
Well, Ray, I want to thank you for saying that. Knowing her professionalism and that type of thing, that we can also get down to just hearing the report includes a bunch of fish. Yeah. So thank you for that. And also, you know, those curtain rods that you spoke about, I just hope they weren't left over from the Carol Burnett show. But that's just my sense of humor.
No, the curtains would have been there too, Harry.
Right, you're right. You're right. Thanks. Okay. Thank you.
Director Farmer, I know what you mean. So that I know exactly what you mean. So.
Director Dean.
It does raise the question, though, of how the curtain rods got in there, because it's certainly not certainly not something you can flush.
not normally, no.
Yeah, I also want to add my praise to Tony and Tim being able to repair that pump. I'm sure that saved the district quite a bit of money, and it was definitely necessary to get that done, especially with the storm we've got coming. I appreciate the fact that the name of these walkthroughs was changed to walkthrough, because when they were previously called audits, I had mentioned them to several people around me who were concerned about their water use and mentioned that these were available, and the term audit scared them. And now that we're calling them efficiency walkthroughs, maybe they'll be a little bit more willing to have a look-see at their water usage. I do have a question, though, that's not in your report, if I'm allowed to ask it. I saw that Facilities and Resources has done some pruning across the pedestrian bridge, but I was curious as to what the status was of the pipeline across the pedestrian bridge, if I'm allowed to ask that.
Mr. Danza?
So the trimming that Carlos's group did was just like on the bridge, you know, prior to that, like that, it was totally covering the bridge. So that particular work has nothing to do with the waterline project. And so the update on the waterline project, we still don't have the pipe. We are anticipated to get the pipe on site next Tuesday. So this Tuesday coming up, we're hoping to get this project started. And, you know, and it's going to start with, and it's probably going to, and it's going to start with, you know, delineating the environmental barriers. Cindy Cleveland is also involved with that project for us. We'll do the environmental surveys, and then we'll delineate the areas that are sensitive species. So all of that is going to happen. And we anticipate, Tuesday is when we start, because if we and you know, and it also depends on the rain too, because construction is not allowed if there's 0.25 inches of rain. So anyway, that's, yeah.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions for Mr. D'Anzo as we have them available to us? I don't see any additional. Okay. I do recognize that there is an attendee that had a question, but we had already passed the time of public comment. So what we'll do is go ahead and move on to item 8, the future agenda items. And we took any number of them the last time and kind of filled in any potential time frame for them. As possible when we went through our agenda review meeting. So I appreciate that there may be things of interest, but I will ask the future agenda items that we are considering right now, if it's something of, you know, significant importance that needs to be brought forward, that's one thing. But we do have very dense agendas coming up. And so if it's a matter of just having something as a placeholder down line that you want to acknowledge, it all well and good, but we've got a number of things to be focusing on for right now. Director Gray.
Yeah, thank you, President Stidell. I'm just going to extend the point I made in the, brought up, I guess, on the consent agenda. I would like, maybe we have a month before we have to make a decision, but I would like to have it as an agenda item, deciding what criteria we will follow to decide whether to go back to in-person meetings. And that, you know, this picks up on obviously on the discussion about the county and what their criteria are, whether we just wait for the governor's emergency declaration to expire or what. I would like to get that as a item that's not tied to the declaration that we do monthly.
All right. Anything else? All right. I'm not seeing any seeing any hands. So what we can do then is move forward to adjournment, and we do have closed session. So I will adjourn, but ask them also if there is any public comment relative to closed session. And Jim Weigold, I guess there's one hand up. I don't know whether that was left from before or whether this is something new.
Yes, I'll check. Tina Dickinson, go ahead.
Thank you, General Manager Weigold. President Steidel, I did have my hand up before you started with the last, the previous item. I did have it, but you did not acknowledge it. So I'm going to just say that Mr. D'Enzo failed to give you a very important update from Tom Luster that he received this morning, a very important update related to the pump test and why.
There was public comment time, and
you didn't take my.
There was not. Your hand was not raised for.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. I'm sorry, but it was, and I'm going to send the board.
I will send the board
the information that Mr. D'Enzo should have supplied to you in his report. Thank you.
Actually, he did make comment. He did make comment about.
No, you did not get the report. You didn't get it.
If you would like to forward that to the board, Mr. Dickinson, you are more than welcome to do so.
Thank you.
Thank you. Now, to go back to the item that I had called for in public comment for closed session.
President Steidel, doesn't look like there's any.
Well, Ms. Dickinson's hand is still up, so I'm not sure whether that's addressing the closed session or whether she just had not yet taken her hand down. So, Ms. Dickinson?
Go ahead, Tina.
I didn't have it raised for this item.
Would you then take your hand down, please? All right. Not seeing any public comment then. We will move on then to closed session under different linkage. So thank you all. And let me check the time. What I'd like to suggest is that we at least have an opportunity for a bio break and also the establishment of the new linkage. So I'd like to suggest 4:15 to reconvene on the new linkage. Is that satisfactory for everyone?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fine. We are adjourned here.
I want to appreciate, your poetry there. 4:15 to reconvene. Thank you.
Oh,
and, for the board, I've emailed out the link, so it should be at the top of your email boxes.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you.
Recording stopped.